perhaps if you could confirm the dates when you were at Chipping Campden School.
I started in September 1939 and I left in 1945.
Right, so all the war years?
All the war years, yes. The war was on when I started and it was still on when I completed my education.
Where were you living?
I was living at Draycott Farm in the village of Draycott, which was in the parish of Blockley.
And how did you travel to school?
We had to get on our bicycles to get to school. It was a long way for a little 10-year-old. And we chose to go Station Road, Blockley, and across the railway line. And if we were ever late for school, we always said that the gates were closed and we couldn't get over. I think they got a bit tired of our excuse.
During that time, I'm pretty sure that you were at the grammar school building in the High Street. Could you perhaps just tell us a little bit about what the school looked like and the classrooms looked like and the buildings?
No, we were in the modern school opposite the church. And the old grammar school was used as a boarding school for boys. And Seymour House was the boarding school for girls. And we were obviously day girls. I'm saying we because my two sisters were there at the same time and we were known as the Atwood sisters. One was known as Atty. The second one was known as Fatty Atty because she was rather plump. And I was a bit harum scarum and I was called Batty Atty.
Could you tell me their names?
Yes, my eldest sister was Jessie. And my second sister was Joan, and I was Georgina. And when the French teacher, Mr. Heatherly, got cross with me, he used to say, Josephine. And I would say, my name is not Josephine, which annoyed him.
When did you become known as Babs?
Oh, from the cradle.
From the cradle.
My sisters were only small and they couldn't say Georgina. So they called me Baby. And Baby got to Babs and it never left me. And here I am in my 80s, still called Babs.
I'm not familiar with the building opposite the church. Was that the church rooms as are now? Or where was that building where the school was?
No, at the present site. Okay. And there were two huts that we used that were put up temporarily, two sort of wooden huts that were classrooms. When I was at school, it was co-educational. Games lessons were separate, obviously. Sports were separate, but everything else was done co-educationally.
Who was the head when you were there?
The headmaster was Mr. Bright. I think it was W.J. Bright, I'm not quite sure if I've got the memory right, but he was a very, very firm but very nice man. An absolute perfect headmaster for a co-educational school.
What house were you in?
I was in Townsend House and my eldest sister was in Hicks, the second was in Ferriby and I was in Townsend, which meant we all had to have different colours.
Could you tell us a little bit about some of those house competitions?
Well, when you first started at Camden School, the three house captains, used to stand in front of all the newcomers and pick them for their house. And I was picked for Townsend House because they thought I looked as if I could run, which was the main thing. And I wanted to be in Ferriby House because Joan was in Ferriby House and I was close to Joan, but I wasn't. When I first went to the school and you were all allocated school rooms and you had to go to get your desk, they realised that they hadn't got enough school rooms. So the form I was in, which was 3B at the time, that's where the 10-year-olds were put, we had no classroom, and so we had to walk down. We walked down Church Street to the town hall every morning, came back for our lunch and went back down in the afternoon for more lessons. And it was very tiring for a 10-year-old carrying all the books. But we didn't mind because while we were walking, we were missing schooling, which is childlike.
Thinking back to your pupils who were in your class, are you still in touch with any of them?
Well, the local ones I see and still call them by their nicknames. But there were a lot of evacuees in my class. And of course, they went home and we lost touch. You keep in touch with your college friends more than you did your school friends.
Right.
So this is what happens. My sister Joan keeps in touch with her friends that she was at school with, because she didn't go away to college. And of course she started corresponding with them and kept it up. And they all married, had children, and exchanged their various stories. And Joan now lives in Cumbria. She was recently widowed, and still is very interested in hearing all about Camden.
You mentioned, was it Kathy Harris?
Kathy Hurst.
Kathy Hurst,
yeah. Sorry. Kathy, Joan keeps talking about going to see her when she comes down. She lives in the south of the county. And so I think they used to have get-togethers, some of them, but of course Joan being in Cumbria wasn't included. But they're now, we're not in the full flesh of youth, and so time is getting rather short.
You mentioned evacuees. Were any of the pupils in the school from the Polish camp in Northwick Park?
No, the Polish camp at Northwick Park hadn't really been established at that time.
Right.
It was too early in the war. The evacuees came from all parts, and there were I remember the one that sat next to me was from London, and she was staying with her grandparents in Mickleton. And of course it was very, very difficult for them to adjust to the new syllabus. And I thought they all had tremendous handwriting compared with us country people. And so while they were trying to cope with country life, we were trying to cope with them as city dwellers.
Thank you. And getting back to you and your time at Chipping Camden School, what were your favourite subjects? What did you enjoy most? And perhaps if you could try and remember who taught you those subjects.
My favourite subjects at school were English, and I was a great sports enthusiast, so when it was sports day, I couldn't wait to get there. I liked French until halfway up my schooling, and then I changed from a Miss Morris, where I came top of the class, to Mr. Heatherley, where I came bottom in the class. We just didn't gel at all. And I well remember being sent for by the headmaster, who said to me, "I cannot understand how a pupil can come top in French one term and bottom the next, and I want an explanation." So I said with great brashness, "Well, Mr. Heatherley doesn't like me and I don't like Mr. Heatherley." And he said, "Then I suggest you both put your heads together and solve the problem." So I managed a bit better after that.
Any other teachers that you can remember?
I can remember Miss Hill. She was an English teacher. And Miss Terry, she was also... And I loved poetry, and I'm just trying to think of the name of the teacher that got me interested in it. No, it's gone.
You mentioned you loved sports. Were there swimming facilities close by?
Well, there was the old swimming pool at Broad Camden, which was probably bug infested, but we learned to swim there. But the sports teacher, I can't remember who it was, taught us to swim on top of our desks. And she would not take us down to the swimming pool until we'd mastered the strokes. And it was a wonderful method, and everybody laughs about it. And I had a niece who was doing PE at university, and I told her this story, and she absolutely hooted. And when I saw her later on, she said, "You know, I tried that. It's a wonderful method." And she said, "I got my pupils swimming in half the time than putting them in the water." So there was something to the old-fashioned method.
Very much so. Growing up, I'm trying to ask you about the war and the effect on the school, either pupils leaving and joining up, or teachers having to serve. I mean, how aware were you? Can you remember things that went on that would be connected with the effects of the war?
I remember the effect of the war very much on the teaching staff, because teachers would be called up and suddenly disappear, and the headmaster had to fill the gap. And it must have been a tremendous strain on the organisation, because he brought in retired people, he brought in very heavily pregnant ladies, anything to fill the gap. And we all had to wish them well as they left, and we knew they were going to war. And that made us sad as children. But, you know, you're not so involved as you are when you're an adult. So it did make a tremendous difference to the organisation. And the syllabuses were knocked about a bit, because you've got somebody coming in and they don't know where you are on the syllabus that they're trying to drum into you.
Growing up at school, were you informed about what was going on? Today we have, you know, everything is on the news. Were children at school kept informed about what was going on?
No. My parents were very protective of us children as to what the war was doing. I can understand they didn't want doom and destruction in the main topic in the house. And I only knew about D-Day when I heard it in the playground, on the playing field at Camden. And I said, "What is D-Day?" I didn't know what D-Day, but all the other children knew what D-Day was. So really, I was more informed by my contemporaries than I was by the school.
I assume, but I don't know, you had lunch at school. Was that provided by the school?
Yes, we were given lunch. Well, we weren't given lunch. Our parents had to pay for it. I suppose with three children it must have been quite an expense, because nothing was cheap. They were abominable meals. Real school. I say now that when I have a meal in a restaurant, I say this is more like a school dinner.
Could you tell us a little bit about what those school dinners were? Can you remember?
Well, it was pearl barley stew, and I couldn't stand pearl barley stew. And jam tart that was so baked you couldn't break it. It must have been a great strain on the cook, because everything was rationed, and I suppose they were feeding us. But there was still a tuck shop at the school, you know, all through the war, that you could get buns. And I'm afraid I used to fill up on buns in the morning. One of the most important things in our education was that you must not be seen eating in the streets. And if you were spotted eating in the streets in Camden, somebody soon phoned the headmaster. That was a definite no-no.
Happy moments during your time?
Oh, we had happy moments. The air raid sirens used to go, and we used to have to get under our desks until the all clear went, which, of course, as children, we didn't mind because we were missing education. The other thing was that we had big weeks of activities, like Wings for Victory Week, and we had to get up stage shows without the help of the teachers, and each form had to put on something that would go on the stage. And that was quite a challenge. Gave me an interest in the theatre anyway.
Were any of your activities fundraising for the war effort?
Oh yes, we fundraised. I think it was Buy a Spitfire Week or something, that we had to buy a Spitfire.
Is there anything you'd like to tell me about your time at school that I hadn't asked you about, or anything that comes to mind?
My overall school days were very happy. I was very happy at Camden, and I loved my school days. I feel sad when people haven't enjoyed their school days, because I had such a good time. But there were strange moments in the war. You heard about bombing, and you heard about, and the evacuees were having nasty moments at home, and which wasn't good. Overall, I think it was a miracle that we ever received an education, because everything was so haphazard during those years. And I just feel grateful that I reached the standard that I did.
That's lovely.
There is a story about revising or not revising for your exams.
I didn't take my education very seriously because I loved my sport. And my father said to me one day, "Aren't you taking your exams this year?" This was the school certificate. And I was only 15, and I thought it was a bit young anyway. And I said, "Well, I've taken them." He said, "You've what?" I said, "I took them last week." He said, "Well, I didn't see you revising." And I said, "No, I didn't." And he threw his hat in the air and said, "God damn it," he said, "what's the matter with my girls? They just shun education."
Babs, could you, if you can remember anything about that awful time when the planes would have come over? You must have been aware of the planes coming over and seen.
The night that Coventry was bombed is etched in my memory, because we children were in bed, and my father came and said, "Come on, you've got to get up and see what's happening." He said, "It's history, and you'll be able to tell your children." And my mother was very cross because it was chilly, and he wrapped a blanket round me because I was the youngest, and took us downstairs and out into the garden, and we watched Coventry burn. We could see the fires, and we could see the planes going backwards and forwards. And he said, "That is Coventry on fire." Now, you will never forget that, and I have never forgotten it. It was a very lasting moment.
Could we move on to that wonderful time about 20 plus years ago when you worked so hard on the celebration of 550 years of the school?
I retired from my job in local government, and of course I was doing Morton Show, which was enough work anyway, but they thought I wouldn't have anything to do, and would I help them with it? And I said, well, I will help you with the celebrations for the 550th, but I said I would only do it with the help of my friend Tim Gardner, and Tim will tell you what we did.
Yes, I got the practical end of it because I was showground manager of Morton Show at the time. And we went to an initial meeting and found that not very much progress had been made. And time was getting short. I can't remember exactly how short it was. I think we got involved in it at about 6 months or something like that.
Was less than that.
The basic plan was to have a dinner dance on the Friday night, an open day on the Saturday, and a church service on the Sunday. The church service wasn't really too much of a problem, and we didn't have to do much about it. The open day wasn't a critical problem. There was just an awkward interface between clearing up after the Friday and the Saturday. But Friday was quite a problem. It was a ticketed event. Somebody, I think it may have been Brian, but it may have been another teacher at the school, had a contact with Bob Wilbur, who at the time at least was living in Tipping Camden. And he provided one of the bands for the event. There was a steel band that was hired in from London, and a disco. And the disco was put in the then gymnasium, which was on the end of the swimming pool. We started on the nuts and bolts of this, and there wasn't enough space to feed everybody. And that meant hiring in tentage. It also meant getting licenses, music and dancing licenses for the whole thing, and also a bar license, and finding caterers, which was not the easiest thing. The tentage started off slightly awkwardly because the contractors bringing in the tent put a pole through the bay window of the house on the corner of Cider Mill Lane, sticking out over the front of the lorry. But they got it up all right, and it was dry, and they got it up actually on the last day of term. Nowadays, I think there would have been a great deal of difficulty over health and safety with that, because there were pupils about while the tents were going up. The licences, one element of it was farcical, because there had to be two emergency exits from the gymnasium. One of them was fine, it was just straight to the outside. The other was through the swimming pool. I don't know whether the layout is exactly the same now, but if you had rushed out of the gymnasium onto the emergency exit route, like lemmings, you would have gone plop, plop, plop into the swimming pool, one after the other, which was completely mad. The licensing officer didn't seem too bothered about it, but we certainly were. And in actual fact, there had to be a scaffolding put up in the swimming pool so that you could not run straight into the swimming pool, which then had to be removed for the synchronised swimming the following day. The actual event on Saturday went reasonably well, apart from some troubles with the electrics. I swore I would never do a job like that again without a proper radio communication system, because we had great difficulty in digging the electrician out. One thing I do remember that was a source of amusement was that we were plagued by a Jack Russell type terrier that was in and out of everything. And eventually I caught it and shut it up in the back of a Land Rover I was using at the time. The owner, apparently, was known to the school and was eventually got hold of and asked to come and take his dog away. But it seems to have been a sort of near-resident dog. There was an incident on the way in. Group 4 had provided security staff. some were better than others, but there was a lady who turned up with a sports bag. And bear in mind that we are talking at a period when the IRA activity was at its peak. And we had been looking at what was being brought in. But this bag was not opened and examined. But the lady member of the security team went away, and we understand followed her down into the changing rooms and virtually strip-searched her. The bag, it was found, actually contained an evening dress. But nothing terrible happened. It was an extremely fine evening. It was hot, actually. We did have a problem at the end of it, but it was a good problem in the sense that we couldn't get people to go home.
It was such a balmy evening.
Yes.
It was so hot at 1 o'clock in the morning that you didn't want any outer clothing on at all. You could go in your bare arms and they were all strutting about in their evening attire, so that was all right.
Saturday, we didn't have to do very much about beyond try and separate the removal of the tentage from the activities that were going on, quite a lot of which were in the school buildings, because the thing had to be planned to allow for it raining. It didn't actually rain, but it had to be planned to allow for that. So there was a degree of difficulty about that. And I remember a difficulty in the gymnasium, which had been lined with tent linings for the occasion, because otherwise it would have been terribly stark. And there was a glitter ball, which had been borrowed, which there was great difficulty in getting down. But nothing really sticks out to me about that, beyond the difficulty of separating the activities and the clearance. Sunday was an all-ticket event, the church service.
Oh, yes, the church service went beautifully, but I had an awful job because at the school commemoration services, we always had For All the Saints, and the vicar didn't want For All the Saints, and I said, well, all old scholars will want For All the Saints, because we used to sing it with great gusto. And eventually we had it, and everybody said, oh, it was lovely singing For All the Saints again, all together. So we did get it traditional in the end, didn't we?
Peter Millam, who was vicar at the time, had actually done some work on it. It was one of the fronts that had actually moved forward in the earlier meeting stage. And he'd got a bit committed to it, and it was difficult to dislodge him.
If you could just describe some of the activities. You'd said that you'd had to plan for it being indoors. Did you have any guests, you know, as part of the...
There were invited guests to the... And one was Mr. Jones came, who was the headmaster immediately following Mr. Bright. And Mr. Heatherly was there, because everybody was queuing up to see Mr. Heatherly and talk to him. And they said, have you seen Mr. Heatherly? And I'm afraid I said, I don't want to see Mr. Heatherly, which made me feel very, very, very guilty.
And one more question. Did anybody from Eton come to that particular event, or was that did they come to the service?
The church service was marked by the headmaster from Eton College coming to do an address during the service, which was quite unusual at the time. One of the things about Friday night's event was that there was considerable difficulty in selling the tickets to that, because there was a minimum number that we needed to arrive at in order to cover the costs, not only of the band and the disco, but also of the tentage and the food, because if we had fallen short of that,
then there would probably have accrued a personal liability so far as the committee was concerned. That required a great deal of leverage to get a result. And in the end, we did just about force it into a middle-of-the-range position, above the minimum needed to cover the costs, but not as far as the maximum it could have contained. But it did require a great deal of leverage on those who were supposed to be selling the tickets.
I believe you made a profit.
We did in the end make a profit from the mid-range position. I don't have the accounts anymore because the file was in fact lost in the flood in Morton Show Office.
Thank you very much.
Actually, it was quite nice to organise something different from an agricultural show, wasn't it?
Yes, it was different, all right. I don't say that I wouldn't do a thing like that again, but I also learnt from it. We both learnt from it and would do a number of things differently.
As you always do.
Yes,
as you always do.
Well, the day you stop learning is the day you die.
Absolutely.
And we're not ready for that yet.
We're not. No, we're not. Thank you.